Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, welcome everyone. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, True Straight Up, brought to you by...
The show is brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine, along with HappyTrees.co. Chuck, broadcasting once again from the world headquarters of the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle. Paper comes out tomorrow. We're pleased to have with us, coming up at 3:30, we're going to have just a programming note, Todd Watkins. The Rhinos are, I mean, it's an epic meltdown over the Bonneville Amendment and the Soviet-style tactics used by grassroots Republicans in Colorado. But first, want to start off with John Eastman. And Chuck, I'll let you go ahead.
Exactly. From the Claremont Institute and an attorney, at least for the present, unless the forces of evil prevail. But he brought the original litigation last year.
For the opt-out.
For the opt-out, and we hope to have him back this year for better, more and improved version of the lawsuit. But he's a real hero to all of us. So thanks for coming on, John.
It's my pleasure to be with you both.
Well, what Chuck is referring to is you were one of the lawyers who was advising Trump in on January 6th. And as a result, let's see, CU has persecuted you. Is it called Operation 65 or something like that? It's a Soros-funded dark money group targeting any and all lawyers who get involved with any kind of Trump-related things. And they're trying to take your law license away. Is that right? At a court case in California.
Yeah, they are. The 65 Project is not the one that filed the complaint in California, but they did file a parallel complaint against me in the Supreme Court of the United States, which was quite frankly frivolous and itself ought to be sanctioned and subject to disciplinary action. But the California bar decided to proceed anyway. They said I had no evidence of the things we said about election illegality. I gave them, tens of thousands of pages of the evidence we had, but that didn't dissuade them. They still repeated the claim that I had no evidence. Normally that would be sanctionable because they were looking at my favorite one was a count that said, I made the false statement that dead people voted. And I knew it was false because as the Michigan Attorney General stated, only 1,500 dead people voted. I said, well, you just proved my statement was true in your own.
Well, as I understand it, you were charged with moral turpitude. And the moral turpitude was you gave legal advice that was not adopted, and they didn't like your legal advice, and that's moral turpitude, I guess.
Well, the real essence here of moral turpitude is that when Bill Barr said he didn't find any evidence of election fraud, I didn't bend the knee and bow and genuflect to him, and I continued to insist there was because I had lots of evidence. So the moral turpitude is the government said what the answer is and how dare we question it. And if you do question it, we're going to accuse you of moral turpitude. We're going to take your livelihood away. We're going to do everything we can to make life miserable for you. This is authoritarianism. Right. This is the government has spoken and we're all supposed to just fall in line like sheep. And I know you two are not sheep and I'm not either. And I'm not falling in line.
No. Well, same thing happened in Colorado in a criminal case with Tina Peters. She was the Mesa County clerk and recorder. And they told her, look, if you'll just quit saying that there were any irregularities in the election, all of this will go away. And she said, I'm not going to do that. So now, boom, she's on house arrest. She's looking at spending years in prison. I mean, you see, you're smiling, though, John. I mean, it's like, how do you they're actively working to destroy you. They're not just canceling you or banning you from Twitter. They're trying to destroy your life, and yet you're smiling. Talk to us about that.
So for three reasons. One, Winston Churchill once said, you made enemies in your life. Good. That means you were trying to accomplish something.
Right.
Two, an old professor of mine said, if you're not catching incoming flack, you're not over the target.
Yeah.
And then three, I'm a devout Catholic, and I know that whatever they do to me in this world doesn't matter in the long run. So, you know, those things make it easy. And the other, I'll add a fourth. Somebody posted on my Twitter account yesterday or this morning that the reason they're going after me so much, like they went after Mike Flynn, is they know how effective we are and they need to destroy us. Yes. So, you know, all right. So that's pretty good company. They think I'm a threat because I'm exposing what they're up to, their authoritarian tactics.
Well, talk
as
about
I understand, you had a 8-day or something hearing, and that wasn't enough, so they're continued on to August.
Well, we were originally scheduled for 3 weeks in May, and I think the lawyers for the bar realized they bit off more than they could chew. They're trying to make this a referendum on every election challenge that was brought anywhere in the country, whether I had anything to do with it or not. And so they asked us for an extension. They got an extension, and the judge then narrowed the timetable to 2 weeks. They haven't even gotten close to finishing with their witnesses. They haven't even finished with me yet, and I was their first witness. And so we've got another week now scheduled late August, and my guess is they'll do 3 of the 4 days of that week with their witnesses, and then we'll be left with 1 day. So presumably the judge will then schedule another a week or two for us to put on a case, but who knows?
Well, how
do they do it in Colorado? I think they have a panel.
California is rather unique. It's the only bar disciplinary process in the country that has its own court. And the judges on the court are permanent judges. They're all appointed. Several of them are appointed to by the California Supreme Court, which is somewhat partisan leaning. The others are appointed by the Democrat governor, the Democrat speaker of the House, and the Democrat head of the Government Affairs Committee in the Senate. So it's not exactly a bipartisan neutral court, I fear. But I've been saying all along, if they faithfully apply the law, this case should never have been filed in the first place, and I should win handily.
Because that was going to be my next question. So sort of a two-part question. One, how do you feel things are going if they faithfully apply the law? And secondly, how confident are you that that's going to happen?
Well, one can only assume that the judge will faithfully apply the law. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to make any speculation on whether that's going to occur or not. One has to assume that that will. They've asked me a lot of questions, trying to say, well, you would acknowledge that this was not legal. I said, well, no, I didn't. Actually, you're distorting what that email says. Look at the line before it. And so, because everything I did was not only kosher and perfectly legal, but was in the best representation of my ethical obligations to zealously advocate for my client.
Right. Let me bring up another kind of related topic. Did you watch Tucker Carlson with Mike Pence and then Tucker's later comments at the Turning Point conference?
I regret to say I haven't been able to watch it yet. My lovely daughter just got married this past weekend, and we're we had lots of family in town and lots of fun things, and I'm still trying to play catch up, but I do look forward to looking at it. I assume Tucker ran circles around him.
Yes.
I've been planning to do an article. It's an interesting pitch that Mike Pence is making to become the leader of the free world. What I call Pence's potted plant pitch for the presidency. So he was in a position to try and do something about the illegality that even he acknowledged had occurred in the election. And his answer was, oh, I'm just a potted plant. I have no authority whatsoever. And now he wants us to put him in office to be the leader of the free world. That's not the kind of leadership skill one anticipates as the foundation for a viable campaign for president.
Well, I'll give you a short version. Yeah. He got, as Pence, went through what he thought was the most critical thing, which is there weren't enough Abrams tanks in Ukraine yet. And Tucker said, wait a minute, what about our cities? What about our open borders? What about everything else? And then Pence said, that's not my concern. And he repeated it wasn't his concern. And then he went on to something, say, well, we can pay for everything. Yeah. And it destroyed him. And then so Tucker went to the Turning Point one, and he said, okay, I don't want to do something that's not edifiable. I don't want to, like, savage Mike Pence, and everybody's cheering. And then he says, no, 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 you can't cheer because that's no accomplishment. I mean, savaging Mike Pence is like beating a five-year-old at ping pong or soccer. It's no accomplishment.
To Pence's credit, he didn't drop anywhere in the polls because he didn't have any room to drop.
Exactly.
I wonder if he still has the same. Was it who is his big advisor? Martin Short, is that his name?
Or? Yeah, Mark Short. I think the reason Mark's so mad at me is because when it became clear Pence wasn't going to do what we were recommending, there went his ticket to be chief of staff in the next administration.
Ask you about Trump's letter, because I think, you know, you talk about the courts and you're right, you have to have some faith. But, you know, Trump indicated that he got a letter from Jack Smith saying that he's the target of the investigation, the grand jury thing. What can you kind of explain? I know Julia Kelly and other people are saying normally you'd be like, there's no evidence, but, you know, we're looking at what they've been doing with the other January 6th defendants. So you got to be careful. Just your take on that and what you think is likely to happen going forward.
Well, you know, the notion that this was a surprise, that Trump was the target of this effort, I think is rather extraordinary. The entire effort since January 20th, the entire effort has been to try and find something on which to get Trump, get him criminally indicted of a felony, ideally one that contains the word insurrection in it so they can make the false claim that he's ineligible for office altogether under the 14th Amendment.
Right.
They forget the fact that Congress in 1872 eliminated that restriction on eligibility for office for all but the top Civil War leaders. And then in 1896 or thereabouts, they even retroactively did it for the remainder. So it's not even a currently operative provision of the Constitution, but that doesn't stop them.
No.
So the notion that Trump now has a target letter when we've known for 2.5 years that he was the target. This is some people have said this is banana republic type stuff. It's not. It is Soviet NKDV, Lavrenti Beria, show me the man and I'll find you a crime. They were bound and determined to, you know, scour the books to try and find something that they could use to pin on Trump to try and prevent him from running for office. Why? Because he's a threat to the status quo. He's a threat to the uniparty in D.C. And I'll be very clear. I am as disgusted with the establishment Republicans as I am with the Democrats over this stuff. They are violating our Constitution on a daily basis. They're spending money that they have no legal authorization to spend. They're regulating us in things that have nothing to do with interstate commerce. They create whole departments that have no basis of constitutional authority. And they do this on a daily basis. And you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. The level of corruption, none of them have ever had a job other than being on the public welfare. And they're all becoming millionaires on our taxpayer through rank corruption. And Trump was willing to punch back against that stuff, as was Mike Flynn, as were several of the other people. And this is why they're trying to go overboard to block him from getting in, because, you know, they had enough beltway bandit creatures surrounding him on the last go around that they blocked him at every turn. But he's wised up and he now knows where the bodies are buried. And if he gets back in there, there'll be hell to pay from their part. And they cannot tolerate that.
Right.
Well, I've grown some affinity for the old Soviet Politburo because Dick Wadhams accused me of acting like them because I offered a bylaw amendment that if you didn't cast a ballot for the opt-out and you're required to have 70% or more, then it was considered a yes rather than be considered a no. And he got on Colorado Gazette and is just almost going catatonic that he put a bylaw in that would contradict the Democrats' crooked scheme. I mean, he just accused me without naming me. I'm just a mere ally. It's called the Bonneville Amendment, but I'm a Politburo member.
You're a Soviet style guy. Well, let me ask you, with Trump, what I worry about is that they're going to throw him in jail. I mean, you know what? They've prosecuted successfully like 1,000 people already from January 6th. Many of them they've thrown in jail, saying that the court apparently is saying, well, this is a unique and unprecedented circumstance. Therefore, we can have unique and unprecedented, you know, things that we decide to do. I would not be surprised if they put Trump in jail. What do you think?
Well, you know, I thought it might be fun when he was first indicted up in New York for him to say, I'm not asking for bail. Put me in jail and make sure you've got lots of cells for my Secret Service. They got to have 24-hour coverage by law. And the state can't preempt that federal law. And then he should start doing a series of letters from the Birmingham jail or the Manhattan jail or the D.C. jail. and just expose the level of corruption and the weaponization of our justice system that is going on here. And, well, you know, he can have surrogates do his rallies, not as well as he can. But, you know, I'll bet we could figure out how to get him a Zoom camera in there into the cell and he could do the rallies from there. And he ought to just expose the lunacy of this. Yeah, it would be terrible, but there are ways for him to deal with it and manage it that would expose the corruption.
Well, right. Everybody says this is unprecedented, and you're a great history student of history. And you go, no, it's not unprecedented. Eugene V. Debs, the socialist candidate for president for 2020, had been taken under the same Sedition Act as they're going after Trump in, and he was in the Atlanta penitentiary, and he won over 1 million votes. So it's a kind of a strong tradition in America for presidents to run from prison cells.
And universally, legal historians, legal scholars have held until recently that was an unconstitutional action, and the Espionage Act itself was unconstitutional, and it's never been enforced since then. Until now. And all those legal scholars who have, you know, publishing for their lives' careers about how bad that was are all hunky-dory in support of it now. It's amazing. The Trump derangement syndrome runs deep. But again, I think it's because he's a pit bull in a china closet punching back at an establishment status quo that had gotten fat and happy and sassy with their corruption.
No, and I think you're right. You know, Mitch McConnell, you know, the Hill is talking about in a Politico too. Mitch McConnell hasn't saying anything about this. And I'm imagining you haven't had a ton of Republican lawmakers stepping up to defend you, right? And saying, you know, John, that's just wrong what they're doing to you.
No. I've got a few. We filed a new case Thursday night on behalf of Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene against not just a couple of cities in Southern California. One of them actually managed the convention center and said, we don't like your kind of your viewpoint, so we're not going to allow you to be in. Clear violation of their First Amendment rights. But Anaheim, it was going to be at a private venue, and Anaheim sent the code enforcement officer and, quote, your conditional use permit will be in jeopardy if you don't cancel this event.
There you go.
Well, we needed you here in Colorado. Remember, they tried to do that in Colorado Springs, where the Republican mayor of Colorado Springs, John Southers, there was going to be a V-Dare event, right? V-Dare, and the Southern Poverty Law Center, you know, a bastion of objectivity, said, oh, no, they're a hate group. And so they can't, the fight, they said, I forget what the reasons were, but they canceled it and they tried to file a lawsuit.
Well, they said, because, you know, we won't be able to provide you any municipal services like fire. Right. Or anything else. And so if something happens, you know, to your center, well, you're on your own there. So they canceled it. And that was the Republican, John Southers, our wonderful former attorney general, who certainly knows all about.
Well, so John, you're continuing now then to inflict pain, even while they're trying to take your law license away. So congratulations for that.
Thank you. Well, and we didn't limit the list of defendants to those government agencies. There's a little known provision of the Ku Klux Klan Act passed after the Civil War. Normally, you know, if you're going to violate somebody's constitutional rights, it's got to be a government entity. But if you're colluding with government and violating constitutional rights, and it's tied to a discrete and insular minority, a suspect class, then you can go after the private actors are working. But there's a subsection of that that doesn't have that suspect class language in it. And that is, if you're trying to interfere with any registered voter lending support or advocacy for a candidate for federal office.
Ah.
And since these were fundraisers, a joint fundraising committee for two members of Congress running for re-election. And so we named the League of Women Voters and Unidas de la Casa and the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce of Riverside and the NAACP because in our discovery, our Public Records Act request, we've got all sorts of emails threatening the city that they would be national boycotts of their city if they didn't force the cancellation of this.
Wow.
So that's by force or intimidation or threat. To deprive somebody of their civil rights or constitutional rights. So we named all of them.
Good for you.
Use that against Facebook and all the other ones.
All the other
exactly.
ones.
Tech companies. Exactly.
Well, you know, that's, I think, so smart that you guys are doing that. And Chuck, too, I know, Chuck, you're my husband, but the Bonnywell Amendment was brilliant to say, wait a minute, there's no rule that says if you don't show up and you don't submit a proxy, it's got to be considered a no vote. So we'll just consider it a yes vote. And that they're freaking out. But the same with you.
Oh, I mean, they're going wild. It's just
you guys are fighting back and you're fighting language. Well, I mean, I think the only way you fight lawfare is with our own lawfare, right?
That's right. I told folks, I said, you know, I'm tired of playing defense. I'm going on offense here. And we did. We filed it last Thursday, and it's going to be an interesting ride on that one.
Well, Jimmy Carter, Taylor Greene.
Do you get to talk to Trump these days at all?
I haven't in a while. You know, and that's probably the right move. One of the things that got floated this week in the Target letter is people are speculating is that witness tampering. So if he's talking to other people that are maybe witnesses, whether there's any tampering going on or pressure going on or not, just the fact that they're talking, people are making stuff up. So probably better we're not talking at the moment. But
well, and it goes back to, I still also, and I mean, I'm just a layperson, don't understand. So you were advising Trump. You were just the attorney. And, you know, Chuck's an attorney. I covered attorneys. It's your attorney's job to kind of outline all of the options, even ones that maybe may seem out there to some people. But that's your job, because you'd sure hate to have a client come back and say, hey, how come you didn't tell me about that? How can they be punishing you for that? I mean, back to them trying to get rid of your law. How can they even be talking to you about that? Wouldn't that be attorney-client privilege?
Well, they've hired a guy, paid him, we know for a fact, already $50,000. But that was, you know, several months ago. So we suspect it's upwards of $100,000 now. To be an expert and to say that no reasonable constitutional attorney would have taken the positions Eastman did. You know, there are a bunch of people that have taken the positions I took, and I think I'm a reasonable constitutional attorney. I certainly got better credentials than this guy saying no reasonable attorney would have said that. The other thing is, it's great fun. You know, my famous memo or infamous memo, however you want to describe it, it doesn't make a recommendation. It lists nine different scenarios, and Biden wins in five of the nine. There's no recommendation in the memo. the advice I actually gave was to delay things a little bit. And even that, there are two paths spelled out in the memo. It goes back to the state legislature. And if after further investigation, they decide that the illegality was not enough to have affected the outcome, they recertify and Biden wins. So that's one of the scenarios. So, this is apparently you're not even supposed to raise the question, because by the weekend after the election, the New York Times had said that Biden had won. And Bill Barr, a couple of weeks after that, said, we've done investigations and found no evidence of fraud. He didn't talk about illegality, but leave that aside for a moment. And we're just all supposed to act like sheep. And, oh, okay, well, you know, forget the stuff we saw with our own eyes. This is like that film out of the what's the movie where everything's blown up behind him? He says nothing to see here.
Yeah, this CNN and mostly peaceful protests. Well, I think it goes back to what you said earlier, and that is from the beginning they were determined to take Trump down, and in order to do that they had to take and I also agree with the people who say, and Trump when he says it's not really him they're after, it's all of us. And if they make an example of you, if they, you know, get us off of YouTube, if they make examples of just other people, then I imagine, I mean, if it's got to be hard for Trump to find a lawyer these days, right? Because they go after anyone who walks by him who happens to have a law degree.
Well, that's why it's so important that I'm fighting this in the way I am. I can't tell you how many people reach out to me and say, thank you for doing this. I wish I could help you, but my name can't be associated with it. I'll lose my job. I'll lose my livelihood.
Right.
And the head of the 65 Project, in a very candid interview with Axios, said, you know, we're not just after disbarring them all, but we want to make them so toxic in their firms and their communities that right-wing legal talent will never take on these election challenges again. And, right. you know, and if I were to succumb, to bow down, given my stature, my constitutional expertise and my fortitude, if I were to stand down, then where are people going to find an attorney, whether it's on the next election fraud or whether it's on, you know, some 50-year-old man exposing himself to your teenage daughter because he claims he's a woman, or, right. you know, all the rest of the crap that we're dealing with, which attorney is going to stand up and take on the leftist agenda? And, right. you know, my wife and I, you know, we've had some highs and lows on this thing. Right. But after the low of them filing the bar charges against me, finally, you know, about a week or two later, you know, we kind of came back out of that, said my whole career, my education, my PhD, my law degree from the best law school in the country, my 20 years as a law professor and dean, and my 20 years of running a public interest law firm devoted to constitutional issues probably equipped me to deal with this stuff better than almost anybody else in the country. And so, you know, this is my call, right? And it's right. my turn to stand in the breach. I welcome anybody that wants to stand in that breach with me. I'd like some additional, you know, folks on the ramparts with me. But here I am.
Right. Well, and this,
the
and
only
I just,
way, in my view, the only way that Project 65 and all that will ever stop is when some attorney general, DA, in a red area starts doing the same, and all of a yep. sudden people are brought forth that absolutely shouldn't be brought forth, but you just say we can't, it can't be, we're all, as you said, always playing defense,
right?
Always, you know, you're gonna have to start charging. And look what they did up in Michigan. All of a sudden the electors, now they're all charged for fraud and
yep.
so forth,
for doing exactly what John Kennedy's electors did in 1960, using the identical language that they used in 1960. Yeah, if any of them are watching the show, if they want me to help with the legal team up there, I'd be happy to do it. That may they may find that to be a conflict of interest, but if it's a waivable conflict of interest and they're willing to waive it, I'm willing to help.
Well, good for you. Speaking of willing to help, we've got a ton of people. I don't know if you can see the chat section. Everyone loves you. And several people have said, because we know this is not free, how can they help you financially?
So, you know, we've got a Legal Defense Fund website set up, and it's, I'll post the link in the chat, but it's fairly simple. They could also just do a Google search for Eastman Legal Defense Fund, and it'll come up.
Okay.
But it's givesendgo.com/Eastman, and I've just posted it in the chat.
Okay.
I love the Give, Send, Go. Well, we couldn't do GoFundMe because we knew they would confiscate whatever I raised fairly quickly.
Right.
But the Give, Send, Go folks have been terrific. And it's a website that allows people to send prayers as well. And my wife and I read those, and they are heartwarming, and they do yeah. help. So you know, if you can't donate any money, send a prayer. If you can donate money, little bits help, large bits help even more. Do what you can. You'll look at the number and you'll say, oh, my gosh, they've raised almost $500,000 already. What does he need any more for? Well, we've probably incurred over $1 million in legal fees already. You can scroll down and look at update 22 that we posted some months back when some paper in London attacked me for raising all the, you know, making money off of this stuff.
Yeah.
And we laid out the 14 actions I've been having to defend against around the country so that people understood where the money's going. Every dime of it goes into a segregated fund exclusively for the legal defense fees and expenses. So anything people can do to help would be great. Great
and of
benefit.
Course, I assume you have attorneys representing you in the department.
I've got attorneys in D.C., in New York, in Atlanta, yeah. in New right. Mexico, and in California, because we've got actions pending in all of them.
Right.
My favorite action, we finally won one already. My
Yay.
Favorite action was a guy in North Carolina. Why he named me as the lead defendant is beyond me, but he named me and Ivanka Trump and Rudy Giuliani and Fox News and whole list of people, and Mark Zuckerberg. So he apparently didn't get the memo on which side of this fight Mark Zuckerberg was on. But one of his allegations was that every one of us was a billionaire oligarch trying to undermine democracy. My wife asked me, are you hiding something from me? So that was a false statement of fact in a pleading, and he had to know it to false. We should file a disbarment action against that fellow. So, you know.
There you go. Hey, well, listen, John, thank you so much. I mean, everyone, you know, we are all standing up here with you. So just,
thank you very much. And thanks to all your audience. And thanks to the two of you for the great work you're doing. We got to keep fighting. There's a republic to save. Benjamin Franklin warned us it would be a republic if we could keep it. And it's up to us whether we're going to keep it or not.
And it's in danger. Thanks so much, John.
All right.
Thank you, sir. Go enjoy the rest of your wedding celebrations.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you to the John Eastman. And if you guys, if you're listening and you want to know the link to help, he says, if you just Google Eastman Legal Defense Fund, that's a good way to, that's a good way to find it. And it is on, yeah, Charlene is noting it's on Give, Send, Go, because yeah, obviously, the other sites would ban him. Hey, Thomas, if you want to go ahead and call Todd Watkins, we can grab him on now too. He just texted me and said he's got a good signal. Well, Chuck, you know, I think it is interesting. And it's great to talk to him. I feel more like encouraged now. I feel optimistic, right? I was feeling kind of depressed about, you know, that the Trump target letter, because you know they're going to do that. But, and I guess he has a point that you have to be aware that the court system can be totally corrupt. And yet on the other hand, you know, you have to hope that, you know, you just proceed as if they're going to do the best and you do your best too.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
We're waiting for Todd. I want to update people. The IRS whistleblower stuff has been very interesting to listen to. It's just confirmed the testimony before, but the committees. And it sort of confirmed everything that Comer and the others have been saying. But the whistleblowers, you know, they identify themselves publicly. Both of them are Democrats, by the way. And they talk about, I mean, there was, you know, they've confirmed, let's see, that the D.C. U.S. attorney refused to charge Hunter Biden for not reporting all the Burisma money until basically the statute of limitations came out. Todd Watkins' number isn't working. So hang on a second. Check talk while I text Todd.
Well, you know, since I was out busy making America better this morning, I didn't get to watch the hearings of the whistleblower, but I think it's amazing that they can sit there and be charging Trump with everything while it's clear that Biden was accepting bribes all across the world.
Right.
Would you have ever believed that's our country, that we'd have a totally corrupt president who spends all his time, not his time because he's senile, but his administration trying to incarcerate his opponents and disbar his opponents. And I mean, it's just.
Then you look at some of the other things too, that basically these whistleblowers said the U.S. attorney in Delaware was constantly hamstrung, limited by the DOJ. Investigative steps regarding the Biden adult children are off limits. They were flat out told they couldn't interview. I mean, they're talking about taxes and deductions and things like that, right? And Thomas, just so you know, I just texted Todd to see if he could call us on the line too. Whoops. Wait, hang on. Chuck, keep talking. I gave the wrong number.
You gave the wrong number.
Yeah.
Well, somebody put up there that Dick Wadhams had written an article in the Gazette attacking Dave Williams. It what it really was attacking my amendment. I didn't get named, and I guess I'm lucky about that. But it's amazing how he talks about how we're going to disenfranchise 900,000 Republicans who do not precinct caucus. We're doing just the opposite.
And we've got Todd with us now to talk about this. Hey, Todd, sorry about the phone confusion there. Thank you for your time and welcome to the show.
Hey, Todd.
Thanks. Well, I'm driving through some rain right now, so you might be hearing that.
Okay. And speak up. You're a little bit soft. Well, so what we're talking about is this article that Dick Wadhams, a political establishment consultant who doesn't like to be called a rhino, basically attacked this, kept calling Dave Williams an election denier, calling the whole concept crazy about opting out and allowing only Republicans to vote in Republican primaries. And then he called Chuck's amendment, which would be have to be voted on by the roughly 400 members of the Central Committee, that to say that if you don't show up or don't submit a proxy, which you could do, which is pretty darn easy to do, that your vote would be considered yes. And he totally freaks out about that and has a meltdown. I think because that was very tricky of Chuck to think of, and they don't.
Very tricky of me. Very.
But it was
tricky.
Like, if this, the what I've been saying is, this is a fairly obscure, in the weeds kind of topic for all of this media attention that it's getting, and the establishment must be freaking out. And Todd, I know you've been writing. You wrote a great response to the whole DeGuadams thing. So let's get your take on what's going on.
The establishment, I would describe him as a kingpin of that Rhino establishment old guard. They're terrified. They were terrified when we flipped El Paso to an America First population of that party leadership, and they were terrified when the Colorado GOP went to the Patriot America First side also.
Todd, are you on a Bluetooth or something? Because we're having a little trouble hearing you.
If you could just speak up a little bit, sorry.
Okay. I'm not on Bluetooth. It's in the car, but...
Okay, that's better. You sound better there.
Okay. So they know that if we do this, if we take back the Republican Party for its intended purpose to put forward constitutional candidates, they're going to lose a chunk of their income. But when I really got involved into the weeds of the county party in El Paso, it became very evident that the party was basically just a storefront for the consultant, campaign manager, donor class. It's so much so that when we took over, they couldn't use the party label anymore. They couldn't use the party building or any of the vestiges of the Republican Party. So they had to form their own organization. Peak Republicans is one of them. I would offer that this Advanced Colorado is probably similar to that. So if we opt out of the primary, the worst thing for them, I think, is they lose the petition, the pay to play. And I mean, right. Look at how much they made up of Joe O'Day.
Right.
They grift the hell out of that guy.
You know, and I think, let me ask you this first. Has your response, is it being published somewhere?
No, I'll send it to the Gazette and see if they'll put it. I know that's where, Dysfunctional Dick had his piece published. And for the record, I haven't read his piece yet. I've been on the road, but as my response is, I listened to his interview with Dan Kaplis, and I'm sure that interview is essentially the spoken word version of whatever he wrote that the Gazette published. But it's just hysterical ramblings, and all of that side of the party are behaving the exact same way on social media. Joy Overbeck is aghast that we would have Republicans voting for Republican nominees like we did 7 years ago. And is it this idea that this is the only way, and that what we're proposing is just unheard of and never been done before? I mean, I've got underwear older than this open primary thing.
Well, and I mean, that's an excellent point, because they do. They try to portray it, the fact that having a primary where you have to be a Republican to vote in the Republican primary, particularly given how easy it is to become, to register, right? And to change your party affiliation. It literally takes seconds. They try to pretend like this is some radical, extreme idea. And as you point out, no, it used to be for years. It was the way that we voted until just very recently. And by the way, it was how we voted when we were winning. So all we want to do is go back to a system that has Republicans voting for Republicans. And if somebody feels that they really want to vote in the Republican primary, all they have to do is go briefly affiliated as a Republic, as a Republican, and they can get a ballot. I mean, no one is being disenfranchised. Everyone will be able to vote who wants to vote, except if you're a Democrat or an unaffiliated voter.
They're pandering to the unaffiliated. And I will point out that data indicates that unaffiliated grew after the open primary law passed. Go figure.
And it grew because of the voter registration. I mean,
the other point is Virginia, which has a somewhat different system, but the same way the Republicans said, no, we're not going to allow just anybody vote for our primary candidates. And they set up their own one, which we're proposing. As a practical matter, what happened? Biggest Republican win ever. Glenn Youngkin, Winston Sears, State House and Senate. I mean, it's the most successful they've ever been. So the idea, if we don't allow unaffiliated to vote in Republican primaries, then, they'll be so mad and it'll become permanent Democrats is pathetic.
Right. Well, and the underlying cause, and Todd, this is what you kind of, because I saw the response that you made, that you were writing, is that really they just want the Democrat money, right? The reason they want it is because within an open primary, what we've seen is the Democrats playing and meddling in the Republican election. And the Democrats, like Catherine Murdoch, have money, and they're spending that on the consultants. So you get rid of that, and then you just have regular grassroots candidates who just depend on grassroots efforts, and all of a sudden, you know, their big money pot is gone. And that's the only thing they care about. They don't care about winning. I mean, we haven't won. Look how, if they cared about winning, they would be doing more to make us win instead of just taking money. I think if we change the law that said you don't have to pay the consultant if you don't win, maybe that would make a difference. I don't know.
A winner take all.
We have Republican legislators introducing legislation to literally take away the voice of the party at assembly, to do away with assembly. If you did that, if you took away the assembly, why would you even have a party?
Right.
What then does the party do?
Right.
If you're going to go drop a $250,000 check to run for governor or senator, and they put you on the ballot, they say this is, that's the ideal of our republic. Now that's a plutocracy.
Right.
Minutes, Todd. You're running for vice chair, and I think that's going to be an incredibly important position coming up.
Yeah.
Because Priscilla Rahm dropped out to run for county commissioner. Tell us a little bit about your campaign for vice chair.
Well, I've been working with the leadership at the state level ever since the election in March. Anyway, when Dave got elected. This taking control, seizing back the reins of our party, of our nomination process, is central. It's integral to what I want to accomplish, what I would accomplish as the vice chairman. I guess I've kind of become the de facto spokesperson for the opt out. And I said it earlier, you know, if we don't do this, I don't think we have really a purpose anymore. If we can get candidates nominated to the ballot who are actual Republican, American, constitutionally minded candidates, then we'll start winning again. Every unaffiliated that I've ever met left the Republican Party because there was no point in the party. They didn't do what they think they would do. They didn't stand for anything. They've compromised all their values away. Show me someone in our legislature right now that is actually emblematic of a Republican platform. I mean, you got Ken and Scott and Stephanie and if I'm forgetting one, I apologize, but the vast majority of the others, no, not at all. They equivocate, they compromise, and this idea of coming back
We need to appeal to the center, to the center. Well, where's the center?
Right.
Exactly.
Well, listen, Todd, we will let you go. Thank you for coming on, and thank you for responding
good luck
to
with
this.
Your campaign.
Yeah, good luck with your campaign. This ridiculous Dick Wadhams column. And drive safely.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you. Todd Watkins there. And, you know, Chuck, just in a few minutes, because I know you have to get back to your other stuff. John Eastman gave me reason to be hopeful. He was just so, you know, you just keep going, right? Can't let yourself. And the conservative treehouse guy says that, too. You can't let yourself get down. Like I said at the beginning, they're probably going to indict Trump on the January 6th thing, and then they'll indict him on something else and then something else and something else. Mm-hmm. They'll probably put him in jail. So we need to be prepared for that. And then we need to just keep going, right? And throw sand into the works wherever we can. But also, though, you know, people are waking up. The Fox, I was kind of happy to see, while Tucker Carlson continues to get millions and millions and millions of viewers, the Fox lineup reshuffle did not work. Now, you know, I did TV for 40 years, so I could have told you, when you just reshuffle the people you have and switch them around. I mean, if Laura Ingraham, if no one's watching her in the 8 o'clock slot in Denver, no one's going to watch her in the 5 o'clock slot, right? And instead, you're going to lose the people who were used to watching her at 8. Same thing with Jesse Waters. If he doesn't have that big of an audience at 5 o'clock, switching him to 6. It's a silly theory.
They came up with a series of fortuitous events where people like, they fired Bill O'Reilly because he was mean with women.
Right.
And so, you know, they replaced him with others, and Megyn Kelly quit. But Tucker Carlson came on, and they thought, well, we can just get anybody.
Right.
And so they spent weeks having people try out for a week, you know, or 4 or 5 days. And they're like, it's not that easy. You just can't put anybody into the slot and have it succeed. So now they're just going, well, what do we do?
So now Sean Hannity is
to tell us. I mean,
Sean Hannity is losing to Rachel Maddow, right? Where Tucker was getting 400,000 people, and the key demographic, Jesse Waters, is getting 161. You know, and the underlying problem they have is everybody knows they fired Tucker Carlson for telling the truth. So anyone left there is not going to be able to tell the truth, even if they wanted to. And I think people are waking up, right? People just are not drinking Bud Light. They're not going back to Fox. If they try to trick us and say, we have this totally new lineup. It's like, no, you don't. It's the same lineup. It's, you know, like I was saying yesterday.
We're going to see Sound of Freedom, and we're not going to go see Indiana Jones the 28th or whatever else they try to shove down our throat. So it's a political, cultural, economic revolt, I think.
And I'm going to make a prediction. I think Disney's new Snow White is probably going to be a box office bomb as well. Did you see that where Disney was like, so they had a picture of Snow White with this very diverse group of people who were not dwarves, like the seven dwarves. It's like, I don't know what they're going to call it, Snow White and the Seven Diverse People. I mean, you know, it wrecks the whole kind of title there. But so
what
then,
have they done to Grumpy?
Yeah, well, then what they did is then they tried to say, oh, those aren't our real pictures. And then it turns out, well, yes, they are real pictures. And like, well, those weren't the official pictures. It's like, I mean, so they're lying through their teeth, and people are smart. So there is hope. Hey, a programming note, because we're wrapping up here now, because of stuff going on. We're not going to be here on good stuff, nothing bad, on Friday. So you guys are going to be on your own on Party Friday. We're going to rerun this show. So if you happen to miss part of it, you can check it out there. Or you can also always get it at chuckandjulie.com. But maybe we'll switch Party Friday to Party Monday. We can have a party. So you get a dual party Saturday and Sunday too, for all we care. Leo is saying Snow White and her squad. That's it.
AOC and the squad.
It was in the squad. Hey, thank you so much to John Eastman and to Todd Watkins.
Appreciate
everybody on Zoom. Yep, and Thomas and everybody there. So remember, Party Friday, just we're going to replay the show. We'll be back for Party Monday. Everybody have a great next few days.
Take care, everybody.